Welcome to the Free and Open Source Software Podcast Series featuring presentations from the FOSS VT Conference at Lake Morian Resort.
This year's podcasts were recorded and produced by the Tech Savvy Kids from St. Albans, Vermont. This episode features Ruben Bennett speaking about single sign-on.
Hope you enjoy it!
Introduce myself, I'm Ruben Bennett, I'm the owner of RB Technologies, a computer consulting, networking, security, Linux, Windows, and other things house in East Montpelier. We've been building networks and servers for small business government ISPs since 1997. Pretend like I know what I'm doing. I am proven wrong on a routine basis, as anybody who works on computers as part of their daily life. Am I loud enough? Can everybody hear me? I tend to do seminars like this in a pretty loose way. I have slides, you know, I'm going to sort of stand in front of them and talk. If you have questions, if you have comments, please feel free to pop up, except for Flint. and I will answer them as I go. First question from me is, who here is... what part of this audience is a technical audience, and what part of this audience is not technical? Technical? Okay. Not technical? All right. Well, that tells me that I can go into much more detail than I was sort of fearful that I could go into without having eyes glaze over and people drooling on the tables. Obviously, this is single sign-on in a mixed environment. This is a presentation based on a job that we did for a local school here in Vermont, who was presented with what is becoming a bit of a classic problem, which is what to do when you've got a Windows domain and some LTSP machines, and you want to not have multiple sets of login credentials for your users to keep track, or not, as we know the case to be. And also, and perhaps more importantly, have a single set of documents and file storage. That was really the big thing that we were after with this project. Setup. So this was a network of somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 XP workstations. And somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 35 LTSPs, with a strong desire to grow the LTSP number and at some point shrink the Windows XP workstation. With two basic data islands, there was the LTSP environment over here, sort of in its corner on a separate subnet, and over on the other side was the Windows network with the domain controller, and, of course, completely separate user credentials all the way through the network. I already talked a little bit about our background. We've got, at this point, well in excess of 100 Samba servers that we've built. Some very small, running a couple of machines here and there. Others for networks of up to a few hundred machines. I personally have been using Linux since 1997. I've been using it exclusively on my desktop system since 1999. If anybody here has done that, you know that that transfer is incredibly painful. But once you do it, you'll never go back. 40 years combined expertise in RB Tech. Not me.
I have 40 years.
Just combined.
Good.
So the challenge was to enable a single folder structure for documents and user data, and create a single authentication repository. You know, if we mash the data together somehow, but you've still got multiple passwords, then you've really maybe solved half of the problem. And if you have a single authentication database, well, that's great, but if your document from the LTSP machine is over here and you're on the Windows machine now, it's really not very helpful from a user perspective. So we really had sort of an administrative need for authentication and a user need for access to data that drove this particular project. The authentication problem. Windows is very difficult to use as the authentication engine for anything other than Windows. You have AD, you can have a domain, you can authenticate to a domain from Samba pretty easily, but the domain schema and the sort of LDAP schema that's running under the hood in Active Directory is not particularly flexible, and it's very easy to break things, sometimes irreversibly, if you go tinkering around with the AD schema for LDAP. The Linux authentication process, of course, is completely different from anything that Windows or Active Directory does. The hashes are different, which is one of the real issues that we ran into. And it's you know, equally incompatible in its own way from the Windows side.
What about the PAM architecture? How does that play into this?
We'll get to that.
Good.
Linux, it's actually a good point, because Linux does use PAM, which is the pluggable authentication module, which is modular and very extensible. So architecturally, and in terms of sort of what challenge to take on in this particular project, it seemed like it would be less of a challenge to use the Linux side as the authentication mechanism, because there, you know, we can definitely build our own LDAP schema and use whatever we need. The document storage problem. Users need to be able to access their documents regardless of which environment we log into, which we already covered. And they use separate and incompatible. And that's an important piece, because if anybody has ever done a Samba domain controller, for example, and you use your homes for your profiles, how many people have actually had their users go in and say, what's this .profile directory? Maybe I'll just delete it. Or how about .mail? Mailder? I don't use that. So some painful experiences in users trying to be helpful and cleaning up their home directory have led us to sort of develop a hybrid way of doing things that doesn't just take the Windows side and dump it into the Linux side and expect all to be happy. You do need some level of separation of the profile still, if you're using roaming profiles, from the Linux side, the LTSP, where all of your environment variables get set up. And that's just a rundown for nobody here.
Did you figure out a way to basically make all of the dot files invisible to the Windows?
Well, you can do a couple of things. You can hide dot files.
Delete them.
You can just delete them, but we did something that I think was a little more elegant, I guess, than that. So the basic idea was to, at the sort of end of the day, the administrator that we were working with had a fairly solid open source lean, which meshed nicely with my fairly solid open source lean. So sort of looking at the whole problem from the high level, it seemed like the most, the shortest and least painful path from where they are to where they wanted to get was to really lean on open source technologies pretty heavily. So the basic idea was to use Linux, OpenLDAP, and Samba as the basic core technologies that we used to accomplish this project. The plan. This particular one, just to disclaim the idea that my first sort of thought is to come in and say you need a new server. in this particular instance, the server was very old. It was 6+ years old. It was running Windows 2000. It was was well in time for the server to be retired. So there was an opportunity for hardware replacement there. The nice thing about replacing the hardware meant that we could stand the new system up without mucking around with the existing environment at all. And that was a big driving factor, was to sort of not make a mess of things while we were working. Deploy Samba as the Windows domain controller, and use Open LDAP for authenticating users via Samba, obviously. The other part of the plan, there's a fairly mobile student body and administrative body, so they definitely were interested in having their My Documents, desktops, all of those sorts of settings follow the people wherever they were. So what we did is we implemented roaming profiles, and then we changed the registry on the workstations via the login scripts. And then we did something more clever than that later on. What was that? Yeah. Just the register, that was part of the login
script?
The
registries and the login scripts.
So we did some folder redirection, which was a registry key that we pushed out via the login script, which actually generally run as administrator. So it's a nice window to sort of get something done that you need done. So that My Documents was actually dynamically pulled out of the user's roaming profile and then put somewhere else, which in this instance happened to be in the user's home directory, which we also had shared out from the new Samba server via NFS over to the LTSP machine. So now you've got your My Documents in one spot, and the LTSP machine has actually transparently mounted that entire home store right over to the Samba box.
Was this basically like an XP Simlink?
No, not a bit. It's basically replacing the registry key for where My Documents lives.
Okay.
Saying it does not live here, it actually lives.
You didn't move the directory's location, you moved where Windows thought it was.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the Windows actually would go to Samba server name, username, My Documents.
Very cool.
The mission, of course, is to do it all without completely screwing up the network. and also without requiring staff to do much of anything, because as Randy spoke to earlier, teachers and actually network users in general, I will broaden it far beyond teachers, but even go so far as to say human beings, for the most part, really don't like change. You know, people have their sort of way that they do things. They want to log in, they want to get to their My Documents. They really don't want to change the way that they do those things. And one of the quickest routes to a project's perceived failure is to create too much tumult on the end user side, because then you get the water cooler grumbling. And when you've got a chorus of water cooler grumbling, it doesn't matter if the technicians are all in the back room patting themselves on the back saying, you know, we did it. Man, what a good job we did. If the users don't believe it, then it is not a successful project. The operation.
Very cool.
It actually did start to feel like this at one point. As we were plowing through the internals of Open LDAP and PAM LDAP and Samba LDAP. So I'm going to break from the slides a little bit because, again, we have a technical audience here. So at the core, what we did was we built an LDAP schema, an LDAP directory. The LDAP directory had to have usernames, passwords, domain, all of that stuff that Samba needs. So we took sort of the regular Samba LDAP schema that they suggest and say, you know, these are the pieces that you have to have. And then we added the components that would make it so that it would back end PAM because if you've ever done any sort of integration between Linux and Windows, you know that one of the real tricks, at least in this project that we had to come across, was that the passwords are stored completely differently. And all of the passwords are stored in non-reversible hashes. So you take your password and you run it through this hash, and it spits out this series of characters. And that character is, you know, that's your password. The client, when it authenticates, it takes whatever you type into your password string, runs it through the same hashing algorithm, and spits out this length of characters. If the two match, then it knows that what you typed in the beginning is the same as what was typed in at the beginning to create the password hash that's stored on the server. The idea behind that, of course, is that you don't want the passwords to be stored somewhere that somebody can go poking around and find them. The problem is that Samba and Pam use completely different hashes, or broader, Windows and Pam use completely different password hashes, and they are both irreversible unless you just run a dictionary attack, which is clearly not feasible for doing password synchronization between the two environments. And so what we ended up doing is running each new password through both hashes and then storing them both in the LDAP schema. And the one trick with that, and the one sort of gotcha that we came across, is that Samba has a really good mechanism for changing passwords, and Samba has really good integration with OpenLDAP. Pam, not so much. So you can log in via Pam, no problem. You can log in using your username and password, but you can only change your password via the Samba side. So that means users can change their passwords by logging into a Windows workstation and doing the standard password change routine, control and delete change password. On the Linux side, if you have users that only ever log into Linux, then you actually need administrative intervention to do that, because the administrator is going to run SMB password or PDB edit for you.
There's no equivalent to SMB password in the PAM.
There's something that somebody wrote that we couldn't get to work, and we spent a fair amount of time dissecting that that particular SMB LDAP pass WD or something like that. Or no, PAM password. But no, it did not work.
What about
and
this?
At the end of the day, we sort of got to the point where it was like, well, you know, we could keep chasing this down, but really, what is the impact on the users for this? Is this going to have an appreciative negative impact, or is it worth just saying this is part of, you know, part and parcel of this project? This particular admin said, you know, for the number of users that only use the LTSP environment and don't have access, it's really not a big deal to change the passwords for those users. The outcome, it works. Yeah, kidding. In actuality, this project did exactly what we set out to do. It, like many IT projects, took much longer and was more painful than we thought it would be going in. Exactly. Horrifying. Surprising. Really not. But at the end of the day, the user data does live in both environments, or is accessible from both environments seamlessly. So the users don't have to go poking around looking for their stuff. It's just sitting right where they expect it to be in both environments. So if you log into your LTSP and you go to your documents folder, that is the exact same documents folder that you see when you log into a Windows workstation and log in and double-click on My Documents. We accomplished central admin of the LDAP passwords, either on the user side, like I said, via the Windows mechanism for changing passwords, or or through the Samba tools to do that. One of which is the user manager for domains.
Okay, that's one of the pieces I'm missing. Is if you're using an LDAP directory and in a school, you have to delete all the kids that are leaving and create the kids that are coming in. What are the tools? If you have a chance later, we'd love to hear more about that.
At the moment, we're largely doing command line tools.
So you're writing.
It's one of those.
Now, are you being hired to come in and do that, or are the people in the school?
No, I'm definitely a strong believer in sort of building the environment and then acting as a resource and saying, you know, if you're stuck, by all means, let me know. I don't want to be in that position of having sort of ultimate control. Frankly, it's more responsibility than I should probably be trusted with. But one of the components of Samba is that it can be managed by the user manager for domains. To be completely honest, I didn't test that against this particular install. But by all measures and by all anecdotes and everything that I've read everywhere else, it just works.
Could you dance around this with using the Samba Web Administration kit and using that to
for a GUI admin?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You can use SWAT. You can use Webmin. The thing is that the engine behind Samba is really what's important, and all of the APIs that exist in Samba. You know, you go and you talk to Samba and you say, "I want to change a password," and that goes into the Samba piece, and that goes out to, you know, however it's architected.
The Samba sync to the unit, to the LTSP password, does work.
Yes, absolutely.
Then that's all you need.
Yeah, no, when I say that you're using the Windows password change, you're actually using Samba. Okay. So all of those hooks inside of Samba, all of those APIs inside of Samba work, because Samba is, frankly, a brilliantly architected piece of software. You know, it works exactly the way that one would hope it would work. And if you bolt some piece on over here, it's not going to break some piece over here, usually. And the last piece of the outcome is that this is an effective way to bridge the two environments. So, you know, lots of users are very comfortable in Windows. They're very comfortable in Microsoft Office. Randy was talking about earlier, the more applications people use that are cross-platform, the more transparent that change can be. And so when you have these environments where you've got both, and you've got a computer lab with XP workstations, and a library lab with LTSP workstations, you know, most of the users really don't care that much. They see the Mozilla Firefox icon, and they know to click on that. They see the OpenOffice icon, and they know what that's going to do. They see the GIMP icon or the Audacity or, you know, whatever it is. And so one of the real beauties of a project like this is that it takes that sort of bolting into a particular operating system away.
Did you address password complexity or password size issues at all?
You can do that with Samba.
Yeah. Oh. No.
So Samba has all kinds of password rule enforcement pieces that you can put in. don't think we did.
Next year, were you going to come back and do MacBSD integration for us?
No. BSD is just Samba.
I've
been there, done that. Mac, I confess, I am completely lost. I have run hopelessly under, but I will absolutely open the floor up to any questions that anybody has. Yes.
The connection between Samba and LDAP.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really showing my ignorance. How do you do this?
There is a module called SMB LDAP. I think we actually compiled it. There was not a pre-built, or there was some piece of it that we needed. That prompted us to build it from source, but it's, you know, we didn't write it, we didn't invent it, we largely take software that other folks have written.
And that's a two-way synchronization, so if you manipulate the LDAP, it'll change your SAMHSA password files?
Well, actually, what... sort of. LDAP is basically just the store. Right, so you're
not using any
data's
utilities.
Over. We're not ever
right
touching LDAP actually, except through the mechanism of either PAM or SAMHSA. So the LDAP directory really just sort of sits there and talks to the Linux PAM system or the SAMHSA authentication system. So.
I've used mostly Active Directory.
SAMHSA 4 has full Active Directory support, but it's in either just come out of alpha and into beta, or beta. I was talking to somebody I don't remember earlier today who said that they had tried SAMHSA 4 on a network and that it actually works very well. I tend not to install beta software usually in a production environment, just having been down painful roads with that before. For the moment, though, the only way to push group policy out to what is effectively an NT4 domain is to create ntconfig.pol files, which you then put into your netlogon directory and call from your netlogon script. So that's pretty much the only way. There's a couple of tools that we ran into as we were sort of going through this whole process that, they're basically PC management tools that can do largely the same thing as group policy, but not through the MMC. SAMHSA 4, you can run right through the MMC. Yes?
Is there anything like logon scripts?
You mean on the LTSP side?
No, not the Windows for.
Yeah.
So I can map printers and.
Oh, absolutely.
Auto.
It's for all intents and purposes, SAMHSA creates an NT4 domain with all of the pieces that includes, including a netlogon directory where you can do scripts. And actually, one of the really cool things that SAMHSA can do is that you can write scripts that use variables. And then SAMHSA will, based on what machine you're logged into, what your group membership is, and so on and so forth, it will dynamically actually map drives based on your group membership or what machine you're coming from or your IP address.
Even for the Linux client?
No.
Okay.
So from the Linux client, no.
Yeah.
I would.
So what is it exactly that you're trying to?
Just auto mount
certain directories.
Desktop, auto mount printers, set shortcuts.
The problem that you're going to have with that is actually probably going to boil down to the password hash issue, which is that unless you store the user password somewhere, you're not going to be able to authenticate to the SAMHSA server as that user. Now, we have a mixed network in our office. I run Linux workstations. We've got a couple of Windows workstations, and we've got a Linux server in the back. So I mount everything via NFS. NFS is not, known to be not terribly secure, because if you have control of the workstation that you're on, then you can essentially impersonate anybody because it just goes on the user ID. So, from a security perspective, it's not a good way to do it, but it's a dirty hack that works just fine.
On the Linux side, look at Pi Neighborhood, PyNeighborhood.
It
generates. And that does that, but then you have to then take the output of Pi Neighborhood and stick it in Bash RC or something if you want it to auto store.
Now, does that store the user password and stuff? How does it authenticate to the domain?
Optionally, it'll store it in clear text if you're completely hopeless.
Right.
But then, on the other hand, you can ask it,
that builds the bottom, and you got the half, the your famous password hash problem on top.
Yes.
And his question is getting real close to what I was hoping to learn when I came here. We've got a real NT40 domain.
Mm-hmm.
The servers are on NT4, and no problem getting our Edge Ubuntu machines to authenticate using the SMB client, and then can get access to the volumes with shortcuts on Edge Ubuntu. Really are looking for an automatic mapping of each user's home directory. That's what they're missing. The kids have really not much of a problem of browsing to their home directory, but the teachers are like,
but the home directories live on Windows.
Right, it's on the Windows NT server.
Thinking about
so
it really quickly,
done
it would
by
probably
the login script.
Yeah. In our sort of research of this issue, it really what drove the Samba server was that exact same problem.
Yep, exactly.
And so, you know, what you might be able to do though is if you move the home directories over to the Linux environment, then you could mount them from the Windows machine over to the Linux machine. And then your folder, you know, you're basically doing what we did, but instead of using NFS to mount the home directories over to the domain controller from the LTSP, you're actually using CIFS to mount the user directory over to the Samba machine.
And in a way, that's what I'm doing now. I still don't know how, and this is showing my Linux ignorance, from my Linux desktop, how do I get that mapping to each individual's home directory depending upon who logged in?
Again, if you're, for example, you're on a Linux box, you've got home/user, which may not be the same as what you're doing, but you know, you've got some basic directory structure that's got the usernames and their folders in there. So if you move, you know, user 1, user 2, user 3, if you take those directories and you put them under home, and you make that be that user's home directory, then home is there, right?
And then they open it,
and then the only piece that's missing now is the domain members getting access to that same thing, which you could do. You could even put NFS on the Windows side.
And again, this is probably, you're going to tell me then don't do it that way. What we do is we separate the years of graduation so that when the kids leave, we can get rid of them easily.
Right.
And their files. And we separate the adults from the students so that their home directories are just on totally separate.
So they're
volumes.
Actually nested up by year of graduation, and so it's not just /home, it's home 2007,
exactly.
2012.
And that the home for the adults is
that,
on a separate volume.
Right. That is a problem that I've heard of.
Nothing like a login script that says map,
right?
Percent user or login.
One of the hacks that I've used in this area is the Nautilus program under Linux accepts the SMB prefix.
So you can say SMB/IP address/home/username.
And is that username variable?
You bet it is.
Okay.
You put it. You can gain that by putting in the dollar. You know, the dollar sign uppercase username.
You can also. You're not limited on the Linux side to have it be home username. So you can set the home directory for a user to be anything.
True.
So you could actually create a nested folder store. And then Samba has the magic homes share. Which actually reads the user's home directory from Etsy password and shares that out as server/username. So that's another way that you could do that on the Windows side. So you go to, you know, you put a link in the net login script that goes to Samba server/username, and it will actually go up through that directory store. That's a way. There are very likely to be more elegant ways to do that as well that I'm just not thinking of off the top of my head. Any other questions?
Do you sync application preferences as well as the documents between
In theory, it would be. In practice, it's not nearly as easily done. Surely you can do some level of that by, you know, messing around with shortcuts and the like. The problem, again, is that, for example, on Windows, you're going to have documents and settings, application data, username, flip those two, Mozilla. And your Firefox settings are hidden up in there somewhere. First of all, it's going to have a different identity. You know, Firefox stores, I'll pick on Firefox, but it's got some random hash of, you know, IX14.32 for your particular identity, and that's not going to be the same between the two environments. And the other trick is that it's going to be, you know, user home dot Mozilla. And so how to sort of translate those, I would have to think about. It would seem that in theory, at least, that would be doable. But I that would be one for me to think, sleep on.
So if someone logs into an LGS machine, they would have different bookmarks.
The bookmarks are actually fairly easy because that's pretty well defined.
Right.
Like where that bookmarks.html is, you could either, you know, you could hard link it or sim link it or copy it. You know, you could copy it as part of the net login script, use boxmarks.
Yeah.
Which is definitely the lazy way, but also very effective because not only are you going to have it here and here, but if they go home, then they can use boxmarks and have their same bookmarks at LTSP, you know, Windows computer, and home as well. That obviously only solves the issue for Firefox, though. Yes?
Are they limited to their traditional exile permissions when they sign in on the Windows box?
No. Nope. If you're using a modern file system, pretty much any modern file system has ACL support, which will support full NTACLs or NTF. The Unix permissions override, so the Unix file permissions take first precedence. So if you've got, you know, a home directory that's owned by somebody else because it got mixed up somehow, then you've got a problem. It doesn't matter what the ACLs are set to. The ACLs overlay on top of the Unix file system permissions. A sample box actually has three layers of file system permissions. It's got the Samba, you know, config file, read-only, read-write, force group, force user. It has the Unix, you know, 777 or whatever they are, and then it has the ACL sitting on top of that. It sounds fairly cumbersome. It's actually pretty easy to manage. Every once in a while, you know, something like MSEC or LogWatch or AID or Tripwire will go through and reset directory permissions, which is frustrating. And then you just, you know, you modify that program that ran that went and trashed your file permissions so that it doesn't do that again.
Here's a throwaway, hopefully. And then, of course, getting this to talk to say, an email single sign-on solution. This could be integrated into, say, something, I don't know, something like, I don't know, Scalix, maybe. I'm just guessing.
Right.
What an interesting thing.
Very interesting question, Paul. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Most modern email systems will use LDAP as their back end. So what that means is that it's fairly easy to extend your LDAP schema once you've got it to hold additional attributes for things like a Scalix mail server or a Cyrus IMAP or Courier, you know, IMAP or any of those. They all have LDAP plugins.
Was that part of the deal here?
No. No, this particular place has mail done by the district elsewhere. Which I'm working on changing.
How about it in terms of Outlook integration? Would you even attempt it?
It depends on what you want.
Okay.
You know, Outlook integration is a pretty broad, you know, IMAP. Is that Outlook integration, or do you want actual Outlook? You know, Outlook is a lousy IMAP client, but it'll do it.
I never even tried it.
Just as well not. It's really not a very good plan. Anybody else? Well, thank you very much for your time and attention and questions, and feel free to barrage me with whatever you might have later. Thank you.